And this series of 11 classes is 6 talks and 5 discussions, is on the 5 faculties. The 5 attributes of mind that allow us to develop the stability and the direction and the orientation and the confidence for the journey of depth and insight. And tonight, I would want to talk about faith. And I'm going to do 2 talks on faith. Because I want to. But it's my favorite of the 5. If you think of an automobile, I'm using this metaphor because as we were driving up there, and I lost the clutch in the car driving up. So Ellen kept saying we should stop and wave somebody down or hitchhike, and we just kept going on first gear. I said, well, we're just slow, but we'll get here. But if you think of the 5 faculties as an automobile, as a vehicle, the 4 tires, effort, faith, wisdom, and concentration, and the driver is awareness, mindfulness. Because nothing happens without awareness, right? I mean, we see that. You can't be asleep and expect anything to work in spiritual, on a spiritual journey. Because the whole point of the spiritual journey is to wake up. And so all the mechanisms, all the techniques, all of the skillful means and the tools are towards that end. And so you can't be asleep and expect the mechanisms to work. And so there'll be a talk on each of those components. But tonight we're going to take faith. And I love the fact that Sharon, especially since she wrote the book on faith, brought that word back into the fold of spiritual, of the spiritual rather than of the religious. It was out there. We lost that word. You won't find very many archived tapes on faith because as soon as you mentioned that word, everybody cringed. They were going to get a belief system. But Sharon boldly brought that word back in, and it is enlivened by the spiritual heart. Because it's the mystery. Where your mind isn't, faith is. And most of us have been working our meditations mentally. And what I mean by that, and I don't in any way blame, because I'll tell a story tonight which puts me in the middle of that as well. But there's only so far you can get through mental empowerment. And as we go through these 5 faculties, at each crossroad, as I bring forth a theme, mindfulness, effort, concentration, wisdom, faith, you can either become something from the development and training that each one allows. You can use it as an enhancement and a self-improvement. Or you can use it and the direction that all spirituality necessarily has to move in order for it to be called truly spiritual, and that is towards the understanding of the self itself. So if we just go back a few months to the previous series on the story of the me, in that, that whole series was really about understanding how this assumption of me, this assumption of how we have to break through that assumption and find something that is truer than our ideas about me. What is me really at its core? Who am I? Not who I think I am, not who I pretend to be, not who I perform out of what my roles I perform, but who? What is this thing? And so these faculties are faculties in the service of that inquiry. And yet each faculty can become corrupted, as in anything. And so my job is to point you in the direction of the legitimate direction. And you just have to bring enough sincerity so that you don't corrupt it. We all do. For it's forever corrupted. We're forever trying to corrupt the spiritual process and make it meaningful to me, about me. And it falls flat. It dies in our hands. It dies. And so these faculties, just take one, my concentration. In the retreat, and we'll use the retreat as part of the teaching of this series. I worked intentionally with deep concentration absorption states. And there was a range of absorption states that I'd never had access to, and this time I did. And after I accessed them, I thought, this is disappointing. Because I'd had enough training to know that another experience was never going to be sufficient. And here was another experience. I mean, you hear the words that describe these absorption states, like infinite consciousness, infinite space. And you go, whoa, that's where I'm going. And you go there and it's dead. It's like seeing a rerun of a movie. God, have you ever bought a video that you've seen before? Oh, God. I spent $4 for this. And so what I did, I decided to use them more skillfully. I would work with them for a day, and then I wouldn't. And then what happens is that the dam of self gets stopped with these absorption states. They put you can't, all the hindrances, so to speak, get blocked when the mind is that steady. But why would you want to have a mind that the point is to understand these states, not to block them from view. So then the next day I wouldn't practice them at all, and the dam would break, and this enormous rush of pre-verbal shame and, the raw, we're unclothed here. It's just raw humanness would come in, and you're a cork on the ocean. And I did it deliberately. I did it deliberately because that's what I wanted to feel. I wanted to feel the wave crush over me, crest over me. Because that's what's left. Those are the nooks and crannies that are left. But what's the ocean? See, the ocean is faith. Because you'd be insane if you didn't. Why would anybody do that? We've been running our whole life from that very thing. And now you turn towards it? What kind of a teaching is this? But see, the cork knows that it It's floating, right? And no matter what wave hits it, okay, it goes down for a while. Oh, man, oh. And then it comes back up. And you know it's going to come back up. You know it's going to come back up. Isn't that interesting? Some of you haven't quite had put in enough time yet so that you know that it comes back. But it does. And you know, then you realize, whoa, there's something much more profound here than my own sense of personal empowerment within my meditation. Because I'm not bringing myself back up, I'm down. See? So the questions of faith. Does our faith extend beyond our own empowerment? Is life more than about me? I spent years, I mean, you can work the mechanisms of the practice so that they seem to be in alignment with your empowerment. I mean, you bring the mind back, you're in charge, you think, okay, I've got to do a little bit of this and a little bit of that, now a little more of that. What's on the, you know, you look, you read what the, okay, now some metta. And it feels like you're in charge. Right? I was coming back from Asia after, oh, a number of years of practice, very, very intense practice, about 8 years of mostly solitude. And suddenly, while I was gone, my father had died, my mother had died previously to that. And I had no money, I had no job, and I had nowhere to go. And the plane landed. And when the practice has been through your own empowerment, there's nothing to rely on because you're powerless in that situation. And I was in emotional turmoil. Perhaps the hardest 6 months of my life. One of the hardest 6 months of my life. I've had a few of those. And things just kept falling in place. And I kept saying, oh, that's coincidence and that's just circumstantial, and yet when I look retrospectively back from a certain length of time, you know, when you look back and see what happened, it was like I was being carried by a great wind, and all along the way I was moaning and self-pitying. And you go through a couple of those episodes. And you know that this thing is not about our own empowerment, about our own force of will. This is not, we're not doing the practice. The practice is doing us. And the quicker we realize that faith is behind every aspect of our empowerment, every turn of event, the quicker it does us. So does our faith extend beyond our own empowerment? Does life contain more than what we know it to be? Why do we bow at the end of the sitting? Just a ritual? Just something that Buddhists do? Not to me. I do it because I realize that life contains more. When we sit there and we watch our mind, there's an intimation, perhaps. From time to time, we may receive an intimation of something truly sacred. And no, it doesn't. Yes, the breath comes, and no, it doesn't happen every sitting. But just this, once in a while, a breeze blows through and touches our cheek. And there's this. And then how can we not acknowledge that? And to acknowledge it every sitting means it's blowing regardless of my assertion otherwise. Even when I have been lost in thought for 45 minutes. All right. You see? Those are acts of faith. When we sit down and we take refuge, refuge is an act of faith. Like taking refuge. What does that mean, taking refuge in some guy who's been dead 2,500 years? What's he going to do for me? We take refuge in faith because the alternative is despair. And most of us have had to go through despair to reach faith. Think of your life. Most spiritual crises of much worth occur from the depth of despair. You're finished with something that's just not working for you. And there's nowhere else to turn because that's all life has said is about. And yet, there's something inside of you going, screaming. And in that despair, not running from that despair, but in the middle of that despair, in the willingness to move, okay, this is despair. Not to try to get out of the despair and find something to distract me from it, or find some way to offset the despair in terms of happiness, not to leave my marriage and find a better one because I'm despairing existentially, my job, my family. Because the despair actually moves us in the direction of faith. It's the call of faith. How else can it get your attention but create your despair? We're so locked into seeing what's in front of our eyes, we're not going to look us. We have to see through the world to come to the richness beyond. And despair is that we're locked into a certain frame of reference with that world, in which the world only means so much to us. That's why we're despairing. It's not open to question. It's not open to the unknown. It's open only to the known. So to move with life into its depth beyond what is known is to move beyond despair. So does life contain more than we know it to be? That's a question of faith. What holds reverence? What uplifts our spirit? What holds reverence for us? See, that's a question of faith. faith there, there's a nice quote I had. It said, faith is not being sure, but betting with your last cent. Mary Jean Iron said that. It's not being sure, because the mind can't be certain. It's not like you can confirm it. It keeps trying to. It keeps trying to through understanding. Now I've got to understand this. So now what's happening now? Now I've got to understand this. See that? Faith is already occurring. We take a step into the unknown, and then we have to confirm what has happened to us with our understanding. But faith has led the way. And then understanding confirms the safety of faith. Do you follow? But is it faith in something? See, this is where religiosity and spiritual, see, now this is, there's like, when you go the spiritual way, there are all kinds of branches out there. We're trying to stay to the trunk of the tree here. You can put any of your religions in that, but beware, because they're full of root systems to lead you away. So we're just going to stay to the trunk, and you put your Judaism, your Christianity, your Hinduism, anything you want to, that's fine, but stay to the trunk, right there. So faith is not a belief in something. It's not blind faith. In fact, maybe you had the experience of when you first got involved in some spiritual practice, this one perhaps or another one, and there may have been an opening when you go, oh wow, oh yes, yes, ah yes, that what used to be known as the aha experience, that there's some resonance, a bright faith, something inspiring, something nourishing, something confirming that occurs, inspiring, just, and that's all faith arising. But very quickly, if it's not verified, if it isn't made concrete within your experience, it becomes blind faith. Many of the very religious fundamentalists have had that or have that experience, but they don't verify it through their own experience, and then it becomes blind faith. And the this is interesting, because blind faith, a person of blind faith and a person of verified faith on the surface look very similar. They both have extreme confidence. Both of them have a lot of confidence. But you scratch the surface of the person with blind faith and you have fear. That's why when you leave a scene in which only blind faith is occurring, you shake that doubt factor and everybody blames you for leaving, or makes it extremely hard for you to leave. And those are the symptoms of blind faith, of faith that hasn't been verified. Verified faith, we call it. What is verified faith? Verified faith is seeing for yourself what is true. It's the whole of the teaching. It's why we sit. Why do we sit? Just to form belief systems? No. To verify what the doctrine, what is behind the doctrine, where the finger points, not stop at the finger. Isn't Buddha wonderful? And at any moment, when you get out there too far, it gets a little shaky and you want to turn back and bow to the finger. Because that's much more reassuring to have an icon. And when you're out there, you're not out there with anything. You're out there on the ocean. You're out there on your own. You're out there in the wonderment of things. And it's fearful. And the way to assuage one's fear is to turn back to the certainty of the finger, to the stability of having someone who has gone before me who knows. And I'll just lean on him or her, rather than be in the very shaky position of having to verify it myself. You see? And then, but verify, it's like, oh, of course. We keep having these, oh, of course, oh, yeah, oh, yes. So when we stay out there, it all comes. It all comes. It all comes back to us. Because what we journey beyond is the mind's certainty. We're no longer constrained or held within the mind's certainty. When we stay within the mind's certainty, we're holding on to that finger with all. Now, what did the Buddha say? I can't go anywhere with what. What did the Buddha say about this now? Okay, now I understand that right now. What did the Buddha say? Okay. Oh, and another way of using the same thing is to find out what the Buddha said, then journey forth and see if you can see it for yourself. Things change. I don't know. Seem to, but let me see. And as faith becomes verified, what becomes verified? Oh, wow. Things do change. I'm more than what I seem to be. Isn't that amazing? I'm more than what I seem to be. All my life, I've seemed to be this. And now, through my experience, I'm other than that. I've seen I'm more than that. I'm richer than that. I'm fuller than that. I'm more whole than that. Oh, okay, now I'm getting it. And that leads to confidence. That leads to more energy, more inspiration to allow us to go venture forth even further. To set sail. To set sail. Wherever the winds blow. And then you're out there, and if you had an image at some point, and the Buddha came in, beautiful image of the Buddha, and you were certain that this was the real thing, and he said, Rodney, I made a mistake. The teaching's wrong. Just move aside, Buddha, so I can continue my discourse. Thank you very much. You just go sit down. That's verified faith. Nobody can take it away from you. And you don't argue it. Why would you argue it? Dharma doesn't need your argument. Why would we argue this? Unless we didn't have verified faith. Unless we were working on blind faith. But there's another level to faith. You see, we've gone bright faith. That's the inspiration. Verified faith, which is when your experience starts confirming your journey. I had example of the Dalai Lama. I was in Bodh Gaya, and he visited the meditation retreat that I was attending. I happened to be a monk at the time, and was being led by another teacher. I was sitting it, and he just came as a guest, and he sat down, And he said, oh, let's see, what should I talk about? And then he said, oh my God, confusion already. And I thought, verified faith, right there. I said, oh wow, what an inspiring thing. That was the most inspiring thing he could say to me. Right? Because there he is. Nothing, no pretension, nothing, just raw. Like on retreat, you're just raw. Okay, what? Oh, God. My heart just warmed to the man. And I felt that was, I don't even remember what he talked about. I only remember that. And that motive, that just sense of, inspiration. Oh, yeah. It's about being human. It's about just going raw, doing it raw, the raw. Just... that's it. And the rawer we become. Not turning left, not turning right. Not scriptural reference. Not teacher reference. We're just out there. You see the strength? You see how the vehicle of the five faculties all have to come together on this? It's not just faith. But who can do it on faith? You have to verify the thing. You have to have the other four components to allow this thing to unfold. So we have stability within that. We have confidence. We have our way. We have the growing wisdom of the understanding. And then the faith to take the next step. And then, you see, it just moves all together as a single unit, as a single vehicle. People who go, this is from Mary Ford. People who go through the process of discovering their own truth and learning to trust it develop certain qualities, perseverance, an impatience with hype, a capacity for self-reflection, and openness. Not the openness that flaps with every wind, but an open mindfulness that seems natural when you can trust yourself enough to listen to others and not lose your sense of direction. So now we come to the integration of faith into our life. Up until this time, it's been something that we sort of checked out. We verify it, it's working, take another step, verify it, okay, got it. We get into this kind of dance. We're still empowering ourselves. It's okay. That's the way for most of us the practice unfolds. But then you come to what I think is the crown jewel of faith, which is abiding faith. Now we're in a whole different dimension. Now, you don't question the winds. You don't question the circumstances of your life. They're unquestioned. You see? You see that? Whoa. Because we abide within those circumstances. We are not separate from them. And so the unfolding of circumstances is the unfolding of life as it's lived. And there's no referencing that needs to be done. I don't need to check to see if this is... the clutch went out. That's it. And so there's no railing against the car. There's no, $1,000 for a new clutch or whatever it is. To abide in that. To abide. Listen to the word, abide. not verify, not be inspired from, but abide within. This is where the mind falls into the heart. This is what surrender is about. Surrender not to something, not to a person, but to life. Surrender is the epitome of faith, of the movement of faith. Okay. We surrender our separation, our separateness. That's what we surrender. Surrender is the activity of being non-separate. See, that's why we have to understand the trunk of the tree, where we're going on this thing, non-separation. Okay. Just this, okay. Abiding. Not because we think we're holy, but because life lived through the display of mind simply doesn't work. And it's through the negation of having lived in that way that I fall into the abiding, into the abyss of life. I have no other resources. I wouldn't like to go this way. Who wants to fall into a hole? I just don't have anywhere to step to. I have to fall into the hole. Every step I have taken has led to more pain. Stop stepping. Fall into the hole. I don't want to go into the... There, now we're in the hole. That's where we're going. Not exactly an inspiring last sentence. But it's enough to end the talk. Thank you.